Good morning, good afternoon, some people. Welcome back to another episode of Bitcoin Magazine Spaces. I am your host today. Joining me on co-hosting is none other than my friend and colleague, Shinobi, our technical editor here at Bitcoin Magazine. Today's episode, we are going to be chatting about Bitcoin sidechains, what Marathon and Build on Bob are building with Alice. They had just announced the launch of that platform yesterday. I am joined here today by Julian Duran, product lead over at Marathon Digital Holdings, and Alexei Zamyatin, co-founder and CEO of Bob. Gentlemen, how are we doing?
Doing very well, Alan. Thanks for having us.
You guys, good. Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. You guys have been cooking a lot on the front, releasing everything from Slipstream, Enduro the last couple of weeks, now Alice and Coordinate, which is all very exciting to hear. I know to some ears here, it's almost sacrilegious to talk about Bitcoin sidechains as it's developed a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths. But I think after the conversation today, I think a lot of people will change their mind. And that's kind of the goal of today's conversation. I want to get into Alice and start chatting about Alice here. But I think for the audience in context, overall, I think it would be great to just give a brief rundown on what is Enduro, how does it tie to Bitcoin main chains, what are the incentives for Bitcoin miners, and then how does kind of Alice fit into the grander picture.
Join the ultimate competition with Bitcoin Halving Challenge presented by Bitcoin Magazine and powered by nitrobetting.eu. This is your chance to predict the future price of Bitcoin during the 2024 halving in April and snag your share of the one Bitcoin prize pool. Join the excitement today. It's free to enter. Put your Bitcoin expertise to the test and make your prediction. Will Bitcoin skyrocket to new heights or make history with a game-changing shift? Enter your guess for free at www.bitcoinhalving.com. That's www.bitcoinhalving.com. Void where prohibited by law, no purchase necessary.
Happy to chat through that, Alan. So Enduro, in a nutshell, is a multi-sidechain platform on top of Bitcoin. And the whole goal is to basically drive incremental transaction fee revenue toward miners by creating these series of merge mine sidechains where the native asset is actually a Bitcoin pegged native asset. But beyond those two characteristics, Enduro sidechains can really be anything. In that sense, Enduro is a stack agnostic vision for Bitcoin sidechains. Alice, how it fits into that is, I mean, you know, you go and you talk to institutions, you talk to builders, the vast majority know how to program in Solidity. And of course, there's a lot of concerns with the security of Solidity, and oftentimes people have issues and take issues with the EVM, how big the state is, et cetera, et cetera. There's a number of problems. But the reality is, if you want to drive experimentation, if you want to drive builder mindshare, it's a term I keep reading on different Twitter posts, you're going to need some sort of EVM compatibility. It also just comes down to the vision with Enduro is trying to lean into Marathon's strengths. We're not a household brand name for degens. I mean, some obviously people who are very familiar with Bitcoin mining and with Bitcoin miners know us very well. But if you're talking about like the retail DeFi community, broadly speaking, this is not necessarily our forte. But where we do come in very strongly is we're a NASDAQ listed company. There's credibility behind that really no other layer 2 network has. And so when we started out with the whole Enduro project, we thought, all right, we're a miner. And so we really want to drive toward protecting the sustainability of proof of work. But we also want to lean into use cases that we're uniquely suited and positioned to capitalize on. And so institutional RWAs and, you know, payments and these sort of use cases, this was naturally the first guess. And so as I, you know, was looking into that market and talking to a number of different companies and builders, it became obvious that we needed an EVM stack of some sort, at a minimum to sort of like a foot in the door. You know, with a lot of institutions, you talk to them about adopting a blockchain solution, their first question is going to be, well, is it EVM compatible? Not because they have some fundamental understanding of what EVM is. It's just that's easy to understand. Ethereum smart contracts, it's easy to hire. And so as I was beginning those conversations, I came into contact with Alexei, was immediately impressed by their team. We're talking like the best layer 2, Bitcoin experts that I've at least come across, a really professional team. And this was back in September, I think, of last year. And then we started talking, hey, you know, the whole point of Enduro is a multi-sidechain platform. The Enduro itself is not a sidechain. It's this vision. You guys are obviously building, well, you are experts when it comes to building layer 2s. Maybe we can merge together our efforts somehow. Bitcoin miner turned EVM expert, it's a little bit hard to sell and also hard to do. So that's really where Enduro fits in, how Alice came about. But yeah, I'll let Alexei expand.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's not much to add. As Julian mentioned, we was a pure coincidence when we kind of got the introduction to each other. I was told, hey, look, there's this big mining company looking to build sidechains, and I found this super exciting given the whole history of Bitcoin sidechains and obviously merge mining being one of the possible ways to contribute towards more sustainable long-term Bitcoin miner revenue and specifically Bitcoin security budget, and at the same time obviously help us realize this vision where we could extend functionality without changing Bitcoin core. So naturally we're super excited, and a couple of months later we're finally here and ready to share more.
For the audience, can we break down what it means, what merge mining means, and what like some of these EVM compatible chains mean?
Sure. So merge mining is a very old concept. It was coined by Satoshi himself. If you go through the Bitcoin forum, Bitcoin Talk forum, back in the days. For those who are maybe more familiar, and I don't know who in the audience is more familiar with restaking, ultimately same concept. Merge mining's vision was to prevent fragmentation of Bitcoin's hash rate. With many altcoins emerging that would use the same proof of work algorithm, miners would be incentivized potentially to split off, stop mining Bitcoin and mine on other networks, which would reduce the security of the entire ecosystem. And the vision of merge mining is that everyone would mine on Bitcoin and secure Bitcoin and increase the overall security of the entire Bitcoin network. And at the same time, would be able to reuse that proof of work to also secure other blockchains, other altchains that accept Bitcoin's proof of work for the consensus mechanism. And ultimately, that's what it does. As a miner, you can mine on Bitcoin and then run additional nodes for other chains, layer two sidechains. And by including commitments to the blocks of these other chains into your Bitcoin mining template, you can at the same time secure both Bitcoin and the other networks. And the reason is, if another example of Alice accepts Bitcoin merge mining as its consensus. This means that to attack Alice, you have to, if you want to really fork and, you know, kind of create a malicious fork on the Alice chain, you have to bring up more hash rate than is currently merge mining of Alice. And so this means the more hash rates we can convince to merge mine with Alice with Bitcoin, the more secure Alice becomes, the more difficult it becomes to attack Alice. And this means that if we get to 100% of Bitcoin's hash rate, then Alice will be as difficult to attack as Bitcoin. And the cool thing is, for miners, there is no cost to this, not really. So you can continue mining on Bitcoin and at the same time secure these additional sidechain networks.
Yeah, and I'll just add to that, I think an important element that we embedded into Alice from the get-go is that the rewards for merge mining. So, all right, I'm mining all these chains and, you know, I'm mining both Bitcoin alongside with all these other networks. But what am I getting for mining these other networks? In a lot of cases, merge mining doesn't actually yield Bitcoin-denominated rewards or transaction fees, rather. But something with Alice and the fact that we have a native asset that's pegged to Bitcoin, as a miner, we were pretty familiar with the space, obviously, and it's a hard sell for a lot of miners to say, hey, come merge mine. It's an easy lift. Oh, but accept this altcoin in exchange. And so that was another important principle, is that we want to incentivize people. We want to incentivize the maximum percentage of the Bitcoin hash rate to merge mine Alice. And it's obvious that the hash rate will move if they get, you know, more Bitcoin or more Bitcoin denominated like assets from a parallel network. So I think that's another important element to highlight here, is that it's not merge mining for the purposes of mining some different coin, right? We're still talking about something that is inherently tied to Bitcoin's value.
Well, if I could hop in real quick, I do want to push back a little bit in that it doesn't have any cost for miners. you do in a regular merge mine scheme have to run the node for whatever parallel systems that you're participating in. But I just kind of wanted to add to the historical context of like where merge mining came from. It wasn't just the issue of fragmenting hash rate across different networks, but also siloing different use cases. Like the original proposal for merge mining actually came from Satoshi himself when people wanted to do a blockchain-based DNS system that eventually became Namecoin. And like the whole logic of merge mining was to separate things so that users who just wanted to use Bitcoin itself could have the main blockchain that just did that. And if people wanted to find some new use case, like a DNS system, that would be its own blockchain that Bitcoin users could ignore unless they actually wanted to use that system as well. So I just wanted to kind of put out there that that was also a huge core reason for the proposal in the first place.
So Shinobi, just to touch on your first point, you're right. There is definitely a cost. The cost is, however, pretty minimal compared to the reward. So, I mean, I was talking with a mining company recently that is merge mining rootstock, and they were saying that they make maybe 2,500 USD worth of transaction fees, and they pay about 2,000 USD worth of hosting fees. Now, of course, rootstock is a not too lively of a network nowadays, so of course that margin is quite low. But on the upside, I mean, you're talking maximum, we've modeled it out, maybe like 5K, maybe 10K in hosting costs on a monthly basis. But if this thing, you know, becomes a layer two, or, you know, any Enduro sidechain for that matter becomes a decently robust sidechain, yeah, the upside is quite infinite. not infinite, but you know what I mean. We're talking about margins in the 70%, the 70% and up. So I think it's still pretty attractive. But yeah, in terms of your second point, I'll defer to deeper storied Bitcoin experts.
So, you know, it's actually something I've kind of want to been wanting to pick your guys' brain about a little bit, but like the actual consensus mechanism that Enduro sidechains use in terms of transaction selections for blocks that are merge mined. Would you mind kind of like breaking down a little bit like how that process actually works? From my understanding, the collective that actually manages the multi-sig peg holding the Bitcoin also actually runs their own Byzantine fault tolerant algorithm to handle consensus on transactions before miners actually start mining on a sidechain block.
So yes and no. So the one thing to mention is that every Enduro sidechain can implement its own transaction selection mechanism. Ultimately, you can implement vanilla merged mining if you wanted to, right? So you could go the main coin rootstock model and just do vanilla merge mining. That is not what Alice and Coordinate are doing, though. So Alice and Coordinate both use a federation to pre-select transactions. And then Coordinate is slightly different. So I'll focus on Alice because that's the one that we're more actively working on as a team. Mike is unfortunately not here, I can see, from Marathon. But I'll talk about Alice. So as you correctly stated, there is a pre-selection of transactions. And you can imagine, again, for those who are familiar with the sequencing architecture of Ethereum layer twos, or for those more coming from the theoretical side, for those familiar with hybrid consensus, it follows a similar pattern. You have a pre-selection that happens, and that pre-selection, of course, there's multiple ways of doing that. So you can have a single sequencer, and then, of course, this sequencer would just pick the transactions they like, and then every few blocks of the sidechain, a merge mine block happens that kind of is this trailing finalization gadget. So you can achieve much faster block times this way. And that's a big difference. So, for example, vanilla merge mining, as we've seen it with Namecoin and Rootstock, where every block is merge mined, here there's a trade-off made between performance and user experience versus really full proof of work security on every block. So what we do in Alice is we prefer faster block times. We allow pre-processing of these transactions in basically blocks. So you get a sign off from the federation members that yes, we've seen these transactions. looking good, all valid. And then every minute or so, and that, of course, that's not deterministic, but approximately on a 1 minute basis, and it's going to be fine tuned, you would expect a proof of work block to be found. And what this means is you'd have a merge mining solution that a proof of work solution that comes out of the merge mining that matches the difficulty target of the sidechain, and then essentially refers to the last produced sidechain blocks that have not yet been finalized by proof of work. And you, in parallel, you continue then afterwards producing more sidechain blocks, sign up at a federation, and then you get another proof of work block come in and finalize those. The exact way that the federation pre-select transactions is customizable. It can range from a simple round robin mechanism to a more complex and sophisticated BFT protocol. This really also depends on what you're optimizing for. So this is also something that right now, initially, it will be a round robin mechanism. And we're also exploring to increase robustness and resilience by using a BFT protocol. But there's a trade-off to be made here. But more or less, it's the model that you described. And the cool thing, however, is that merge mining can be plugged in onto different models. So you can make it as sophisticated, as advanced as you like, and still then just put merge mining on top as this trailing finalization by the miners.
All right. I guess another question I have, I just kind of want to frame it correctly for listeners. So forgive me if I take a minute. But the way things work now with that mechanism, and just to clarify, like, this would be very different. I know you guys are intending and following things like BitVM or other potential avenues to a non-federated peg. So in that world where you guys were able to make that progression, this question would kind of not make sense. But at least right now, with the collective handling block selections for Alice and Coordinate, do you guys have any intents to try to work towards a blind mining scheme? From what I read, the miners are expected to actually run full nodes for both chains if they're merge mining them. Whereas, like, the reality of the pre-selection by the Federation, there's no reason that they could not just run a light client that costs literally nothing and just verifies the Federation's signature on block headers that they merge mine, and actually just completely remove the need for having them run a full node for any of these chains at all, at least as long as this current collective Federation-based model exists, before you guys are able to, if you can, transition to something like BitVM or a more trustless peg. Like, is that something you guys are considering or have thought about at all?
We have thought about it and made the decision to do the exact opposite of blind merge mining. And the reason is, yes, initially, this is federated, but the goal is, and this is also what coordinates the GXO-based model, which is more experimental, is really also driving or spearheading the way. The goal is to actually make sure that miners do validate. And if they see that something is going on, they would stop mining. And essentially, then you would detect a failure. So ultimately, like, in the long term, you want to be able to balance between Federation and the miners. And on the Alice side right now, it's very simple, very straightforward. And on the coordinate side, there is more experimentation being done, where there is more advanced transaction selection logic, with the idea that the idea here is that in the future, and in future designs, and potentially already in coordinate, I'm not 100% sure if this will be ready for coordinate launch, so don't quote me on this, but this is definitely something that's being looked into, to give users a way that even if the Federation does not mine your transaction, that miners at some point will still be able to include it. So the idea is that you have the option in future designs to have the Federation only fill up, let's say, 80% of the blocks, and then 20% of the transactions are actually selected by miners directly. And for that, they would have to run full nodes. Of course, on day one, if we just go with, okay, the Federation must pre-select all the transactions and miners can't really do anything in that regard, then yes, you could, in theory, do it as a blind merge mining scheme. But ultimately, you want miners to run full nodes to be aware of what's going on, because it just increases the security of the system. And ultimately, as Julian pointed out, the cost of running a full node versus a Litecoin, right? The costs are on the integration. Running a full node nowadays, is especially for a mining business, is not really the bottleneck, I would say. It's more of, is it worth the time spent on this thing? And I don't think the time spent would be less with a Litecoin.
Well, I mean, two things I kind of want to say there. Like, as far as like the relative cost for running nodes, I feel like when this point comes up discussing sidechains, it's kind of like both sides are talking past each other to some degree. Like, it's very cheap and not expensive at all for a massive mining farm or a large-scale company. But that could turn into a cost that is very material for smaller-scale miners. And so when that comes up as a criticism, at least, you know, from my view personally, when I make those arguments, it's discussing like that these things are establishing a floor pretty much of how far down you can decentralize mining operations. Because when you start adding these costs that for a large mining farm are nothing, for somebody with, you know, 20 machines in a garage somewhere, that actually could be a material cost. And so it's kind of like thinking forward in terms of how much we can dial that knob on the level of decentralization that becomes an issue, not with the landscape of mining now. But as far as like the merge mining adding security to the coins, I think that would be a completely valid argument if you had something like a BitBM peg or something like Drive Chains. But I don't really see how that adds material security in a model like this right now when the coins are still custodied by the Federation. Like what the miners choose to merge mine, it doesn't really do anything to prevent the Federation from acting however they see fit.
So you're not wrong, and obviously, right, I fully agree that additional hardware requirements definitely may impact smaller miners. The reality, I guess, here is that most small miners, they run, like, they participate in a pool because solo mining is not feasible for them. And then basically the pool would run the node, right, for Alice in that case. And because in practice, it's anyway the pool that does the merge mining. It's not the individual miner because we don't have tracking V2 or anything that allows the miners to select their own transaction or block templates. So I definitely see, like, in the distant future where we hopefully have a more decentralized mining setup, yes, absolutely. And then we need, but again, the question is, will running the node will be a problem? Is that a problem or not? Right now in practice, you know, the pools will be the ones running these nodes. And that's what they do for other merge mining chains. And it's not the individual miners. And then the individual miner could still rely on you know, running a live client. So that is true. You could fetch, you know, just use an RPC interface from another full node. We don't want that because ultimately the goal is, it's a marginal cost that we see today with participating miners. The feedback we get is it's not really a blocker. And that's why, of course, it's better that you have more full nodes than live clients. I agree with your assessment. And in theory, you know, large, high hardware requirements for full node operation could become a problem if you really get to a point where we have decentralized mining pools where individuals really can participate, select their own transactions, select the chains and merge mine. But today it's not yet the case. And of course, yeah, I'm not sure this really changes too much in BitVM, to be fair. Like, it depends how it's implemented.
One thing I'll just add on the first point about smaller miners and the pool side of things. We've had a lot of big pools reach out, and they're obviously very interested in merge mining because these costs are minimal. But I should note, we do have a number of very fringe smaller mining companies, and not to the extent of an individual in their garage with 20 miners, but definitely smaller mining companies reach out with interest in merge mining. So, you know, we haven't worked out the economics for them exactly just yet, but the fact that we have a lot of inbound on that front, and, you know, I'd love to give names, but none of these relationships are yet public, but I will say that the community has been very supportive of this effort and very intrigued by the prospect of merge mining these sidechains. So at the end of the day, look, I studied economics. Revealed preference is the best, oftentimes the best measure for the best gauge for whether or not something is economically rational for somebody to engage in. And we're seeing a lot of revealed preference for merge mining these sidechains. So not as concerned on that side. The last bit I'll mention. And in terms of the Federation, yeah, seconding what Alexei just said, look, at the end of the day, we implemented this Federation design in large part to make sure that these chains are production ready from the get-go. So there's, of course, a lot of trust assumptions. And, you know, this is not the ideal framework that we'd like to work under. And BitVM, you know, depending how Alexei mentioned how it's implemented, it solves some of these problems, doesn't necessarily solve all of them. There may be future improvements or advancements or protocols, whenever, that we can leverage in order to make the system more trustless. But, you know, Galaxy Digital had this really interesting report come out. I think it was maybe in the fall of last year. It could have been in the summer. But they were doing a deep dive on how optimism and these optimistic rollups in the EVM world, how they went to market and how they went to market basically with these single sequencers, massive centralization concerns. But they worked. You know, they had fast block times. They had low fees. And they allowed people, entities, businesses, whatever, to experiment and actually engage with these chains and try to adopt blockchain solutions, maybe in a very in their infancy, but they worked to an extent that it was institution grade. Now, connecting that to how I envisioned these Enduro sidechains coming out, and Alice in particular, the way I see it is my biggest priority is I want this thing to work, right? When I'm pitching the institutions every single week on the benefits of tokenizing their fringe assets or their stranded assets, I'm chatting with loyalty providers in different parts of the world about, you know, how loyalty would be a much better system if it were interoperable and on Bitcoin. And when you're pitching these sort of institutions, when you're talking to these markets, they're not interested in hearing of a half-baked solution or a half-baked technological product. They want the real deal. And so my priority from the get-go with this has been, let's minimize these trust assumptions as much as possible, because at the end of the day, we're not trying to build some permission chain. That was obviously one of the founding principles, but the second and equally as important is I want this thing to work. And so with the Federation and the sort of entities that we're recruiting for that, we'll make the list public and describe more details on that as time comes within the next month or so. But we're really trying to look for, and we're really talking mostly to Bitcoin forward entities that have a proven record of thought leadership, such that it at least gives the, you know, trust, verify, don't trust, obviously, but in the context of sidechains and how, you know, this whole layer two sidechain world of Bitcoin currently operates, you're going to have to be trusting somebody. And so why not be it top entities, ones that people respect? And so that's really been a focus of mine. I want these things to work, and I want people to adopt them. And let's progressively decentralize when the means to do so are production ready.
Julian, I'm really looking forward to seeing some of the reporting that comes out in the coming months and seeing who you've been talking to. Excited to see what comes of that. I do want to get into a little bit of more so like what Alice is, why it's important to have an avenue for a multi-chain application, and kind of what some of the goals are for bringing on developers from some of these other platforms. I know we've talked kind of extensively about some of the miners' needs, but let's shift conversation here to talk about what are the needs from the developer side.
Yeah, absolutely. The way I look at that, it's, I have two approaches to it in terms of developing this developer base on top of Alice and, broadly speaking, Enduro. There's, of course, the traditional way where you have, you know, the hackathons and you're engaging different builders, these early stage teams, and they have great ideas, big visions for how, you know, blockchain can be adapted to solve certain real world problems. And we're chatting with a bunch of these teams, and we're very interested in catalyzing this sort of innovation. But I think that's how usually things are done, and I don't want that to be our only approach. The approach that I'm focusing most of my time on, even though, you know, obviously if you're a builder out there and you want to build something on Bitcoin, maybe you come from a different ecosystem, you're intimidated by Bitcoin scripting and you don't even know what a UTXO is, you know, Alice is the place for you, and we're more than happy to chat and engage. But where I spend a lot of my time is actually going to the side of institutions where they have these problems that can be solved by blockchain. You know, whether it be real estate funds or, you know, maybe bond providers or issuers of certain types of, you know, illiquid assets, whatever it might be, chatting with these people and sort of pitching them on how blockchain can help broadly speaking and where Bitcoin fits into that vision. And then where you know, the developer conversation comes into play, and when we start engaging developers, is we persuade the decision maker. The decision maker then allocates a budget, and then you have this, you know, the developer base that's hired and is engaging with this, you know, with this side chain in order to build an incredible solution. So the focus there is, I guess you could say, one element is bottom up, another one is top down. And I don't think a lot of chains can focus on top down because they can't even get meetings with a lot of these top decision makers. You know, you're talking about teams that, you know, maybe they raised an early round, or you're talking about teams that have spent most of their time focusing on the technology of whatever they're building. And, you know, mad respect for those teams and mad respect for everybody who's trying to build on any sort of Bitcoin layer two or sidechain. It's a very difficult task, something I didn't quite appreciate at the get-go, but definitely appreciate now. But one thing I want to do with Alice is leverage, again, as I said before, Marathon's core competency and the fact that it is a blue chip compatible company. Leverage that brand, leverage that backing, and be able to then go out to the world and really engage a lot of stakeholders that people were not expecting could be engaged to flip onto blockchain. And so I've talked about this a number of times in other forums with other different, especially in the EVM world. And the pushback I often get is, well, you know, Polygon tried that team and it didn't go too well for them. What makes you think you're going to do better? And we see that's where I think the Bitcoin element comes into play, because you're trying to pitch somebody on integrating Polygon or Avalanche or any of these other things, right? The first thing that's going to come to mind is, wait a second, weren't those the chains that were, you know, cited by the SEC as like there's some issues with them? And if we're not talking about an American audience, it just becomes, well, I've never heard of these chains. Like, well, where exactly does this come from? But you pitch them Bitcoin, and now all of a sudden, it's a lot more clear what's going on. And so to go back to your question, Alan, how do you engage these developers from this top-down approach, i.e. from the decision maker, not necessarily from the developer at the get-go? It's by leveraging that Bitcoin appeal and security. Because Bitcoin is something that not only developers understand, everybody in this world understands. It has a market value. It has a brand that I would say is perhaps equal or exceeds that of Apple or Microsoft, these billion-dollar companies. And so we really want to try to leverage that as the entry point to convincing these decision makers such that they then allocate capital in order to build out these developer communities that are engaging with Alice. Again, two different approaches, and I think both are very important, but I'm spending most of my time on the latter.
Can you talk to perhaps some of the needs that these institutions are kind of speaking to in your conversations with them? What are they looking to develop that hasn't been successful in the past, but they know is a need for them right now?
Yeah, oftentimes it's varied. I would say the downside of this institutional approach and pitching them is that you often have to develop these bespoke solutions or kind of like, you know, tailor the solution to their particular needs. It's not often that you can just have a cookie cutter approach. But I would say the number one thing that you see with a lot of, well, at least how, what, when I think of, all right, what industries do we need to target? I tend to look for, all right, what is an illiquid asset? Where is there an asset that it is very hard to raise capital for? And once you've raised capital for it, you're basically just stuck with that cap table with those investors. There's no secondary market. And yet the asset itself is very appealing. So, you know, what one area that we've been exploring and, you know, more news to come soon, of course, is that of whiskey. You know, this has been an interest of mine for the last couple months, where whiskey, you have this industry where you have a lot of oftentimes raising capital, or rather raising capital from investors in order to invest in a whiskey distillery or to invest in whiskey barrels to later age them and then sell them to the market, is a very ad hoc process where, you know, it's not like you have like some super global and easy to access like whiskey exchange where you can just, you know, raise rounds from different investors and then just, you know, create a secondary market where they can sell their shares while this whiskey is aging. But here you have an industry that is very appealing. You know, people drink whiskey all across the world. I mean, I'm from Latin America, and if you went to Latin America and pitched most Latin American men on investing into whiskey distilleries or like having tokenized shares of a whiskey barrel, you know, they'd go in on that in a second. Right. And so it's about thinking creatively here, where you have a lot of these industries that are appealing or well known, but where financing and TradFi isn't quite meeting their needs. So that's one area. But another area or another set of problems I'd say that institutions think about a lot is that of engagement. So here is, I think, where we get into the concepts of loyalty and we get into concepts of deepen. But you basically have institutions. I mean, most institutions out there have a marketing budget, obviously, and they have employees that they wish would care about the capital that they're constantly using, whether that be physical or maybe, you know, it could be a database, whatever. But the point being is you have institutions that want to engage their customers, engage their employees. How better to do that than tokenizing some of these assets and issuing rewards of some kinds based on the contributions that these employees, that these customers are contributing? So I know I'm talking very like high level right now, and maybe it's missing the a concrete example there would be much more helpful. But with tokenization, generally speaking, and with incorporating Bitcoin to it, you basically have a lever to engage people without any minimums, without any maximums. No dependency on local rails, and you basically have an asset at your disposal that everybody knows and loves. Not everybody loves Bitcoin, but I guarantee you, even the haters would love to hold some, right? You know, everybody's quite familiar about the meteoric rise and wants to be part of that. So it's really about thinking out of the box, because a lot of the typical use cases, tokenized bonds, right? Everybody does that, man. Like all of these, bond issuers, they've been pitched by a number of different tokenization solutions or providers, and those sort of areas are less exciting to me. Although we're exploring them, there's no harm in exploring them. But I really think where tokenization delivers its best value is really for institutions that are at the fringes, and so that's really where I spend a lot of my time.
Well, here's an interesting consideration for that. Aside from onions, due to hysterical legal artifacts of the past. There is no agricultural product out there pretty much that does not have a futures market available to them, except cannabis, which is something that numerous companies and like efforts have been made over the last decade to try to actually get through the insane regulatory overhead to bring to market. And that is a market like just growing in like at least state level, like legalized status all over the US, and it's an agricultural business. It has all the risks. It has all the things you have to take on in terms of like uncertainty of output or success of things that any agricultural business does, but it has zero access to any type of futures markets for the producers to actually hedge that risk. It's a completely wide open field. And that industry also conveniently is persecuted in the exact same way in terms of access to financial rails and banking services access.
Right.
So that is a huge potential use case for tokenizing things like this. That's I'm sure a lot of people listening just heard token and then send out thinking scams. But there are very legitimate like market roles that can be filled with things like this. And like cannabis is a perfect example of one that has a completely legitimate need for that type of financialization, but is being denied access to the legacy rails or services that would offer them that possibility.
Shinobi, I think you're spot on. And actually, this is exactly what I'm talking about. This is where the genesis of Alice comes from, is we have so many problems and so many industries in the world that are in need of better financial tooling or better, whether it be futures markets or access to financing. I don't want the conversation to stop at the stack, and I don't want the conversation to stop at the integration effort. I want the conversation to flow, and I want the team that I'm speaking to be able to just immediately grasp, all right, that's a technology that we're building on. Let's focus on the problems you're solving. And for better or for worse, when you approach a lot of decision makers that aren't super blockchain forward, they only know vaguely that Bitcoin is valuable, and they know vaguely that Ethereum has these things called smart contracts that, allow you to do cool automated stuff, right? And so the goal with Alice is sort of appeal to that normie audience in a way so that we can solve problems exactly like that. And so, to clarify, when I say tokenization, I'm not talking about random, shit coins. That's the least of my concerns, right? Creating meme coins on Alice, it's not even on my first 100 items on my to-do list, all right? Like, this is exactly what I'm talking about. So no, I love that idea, and I'm going to follow up on that.
Great to hear, because that is, like I said, a very growing industry that is in a quasi-gray area legal state that is still having all of these problems with financial integration at a massive scale. Like that, I think, is a hugely ignored opportunity in this space, because the minute you say the D word in Bitcoin, people immediately think darknet markets and cypherpunk. They don't see this whole middle ground that has become a massive multi-billion dollar market. You know, random observation / tangent. Bitcoiners on the whole really suck at like identifying potential adopters and just going at them.
Well, I'm not going to confirm or deny that, but I will say that I think in some ways that's a strength, because Bitcoiners have been so focused on the technology and so focused on being very thorough in their approach. You don't have a lot of that scammy markety stuff that happens in other ecosystems. I mean, you go to like these other ecosystem conferences or events, and it just, you know, it just screams of, you know, I'm trying to sell you something, and it's, you know, shoddy on the back end, but whatever, right? Like tokens, blockchain, hoorah, right? Something good about the Bitcoin network insofar as it's been so focused on developing like the best in class blockchain network, the best in class decentralization. It's that, all right, well, you know, we have this product that can actually be sold at scale. But I'm always keen on shifting the conversation toward that adoption side, because again, we're dealing with a brand that is literally at the level of the Apple logo. And it's like people just kind of take that for granted. You know, it's like, all right, number go up. Like, how could that be the only narrative? If like Bitcoin is like one of the only assets, maybe the only asset, where if you spoke to a random kid in a random city in Asia, and you spoke to an investment banker in Manhattan, they would both likely have some positive impression of it, or maybe have some intrigue. What other asset, what other company, what other product produces that sort of emotion or that sort of impression that's so global, right, in nature? It's a massively underutilized. It's a massively underutilized piece of technology, simply put.
100%.
There's so much to come. Just is crazy to think about. I know a lot of things are going to change in the next year, 2 years, and a lot of people's ideas are definitely getting challenged right now, which is always a good thing. I mean, that's how growth happens. Joining Alexi, I'm a little curious to hear a little bit. I know Enduro, Alice, Coordinate have all been coming out under the Marathon umbrella, but I'd like to hear this kind of synergy that's going on between you guys and Build on Bob, and how you two partnered up on Alice.
Yeah, I can start. Or do you want to start, Alexi?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just, you know, be brief on the side of Enduro and how we envision it. Like I mentioned, when I first met Alexi and we continued talking and our teams got to know each other, it was very clear that they're coming from the world of being both Bitcoin experts and experts when it comes to the EVM. And building an EVM sidechain, by the way, I think this is something that a lot of people view as very easy, or like, you know, it's been done before, right? Like rootstock. Well, hold up. You know, building an EVM sidechain is very different from going to market with an EVM sidechain. There's a lot of infrastructure that you need to have in play, whether that be oracles, whether it be custody solutions, exchange listings, wallets. You know, I'm only scratching the surface. And that's a place where I see tremendous potential in working with Bob, because these are all considerations. These are all integrations. This is all infrastructure that they've been thinking about for, you know, almost a decade, right? I think since 2016, they've been building on Bitcoin, right? So we're talking about a team here and a developer experience that right out of the gate, our Alice sidechain is going to have that really very few other sidechains that have come out and, you know, the past decade have been able to match, right? Because a lot of sidechains that come to market, they focus all this time on creating like a best-in-class protocol, but then they don't worry about these integrations. And so the Bob developer experience is something that we're very excited is going to be available on Alice from the get-go, and it's going to allow that organic developer base to just start engaging with this chain from the early stages, right? So that's really where I see big potential.
And Julian is too kind, but we have been focusing on figuring out how we can really solve like the problem of bootstrapping a successful ecosystem. As Julian mentioned, we have been working on in this space for a while. Specifically on like sidechain and bridge designs. And we learned the hard way. Like, I mean, we learned the hard way that if you focus only on the tech, that's great. But there's plenty of examples where focusing only on tech only gets you so far. We've seen this outside of crypto, outside of the blockchain space. And now, especially, there's tons of ecosystems where the tech is great, but it's unusable. And this is something where when we started working on the Bob stack and then trying to figure out, okay, well, what is the best way for a project to go to market today? How do we get all these developers to start building on Bitcoin? How do we get the thousands of the builders that have left Bitcoin previously, how do we get them to come back? And of course, there's a culture shift that's happening, but also specifically, there is all the tooling and kind of infrastructure that has been created today. And then the question is, okay, do we start from scratch and try to compete on 10 different fronts? Or do we embrace that innovation and infrastructure that has been built in other ecosystems and make it our own and make it and basically try to then, you know, build bridges and integrate it into the Bitcoin ecosystem and make it easy for builders to work on the intersection? And ultimately, that's Bob's mission as a stack, as a technology, to say, okay, look, if you're used to building on EVM, you're just the developer, you know, it's easier for you to start with Solidity and EVM because, you know, it has been around for a while, it's battle tested. There's billions, if not trillions of dollars that have been processed by protocols, right? It isn't the trillions that has been processed by protocols that have been built on EVM. These tools are robust and it's much easier for you to get started if these tools are made accessible to you. And then if you can use these tools to also build on a Bitcoin sidechain and contribute back to the Bitcoin ecosystem and work with Bitcoin liquidity and the Bitcoin asset, that unites the best of both worlds. And in short, we realized after all these years that there's like three problems that you just solve when building a Bitcoin sidechain layer two. It's a Bitcoin problem. How do you inherit Bitcoin security and how do you get a trust minimized Bitcoin peg? These are complicated problems. There is different solutions, right? From a federated peg to up to BitVM, which is still very new. But then there's two other problems that should not be underestimated. And that's the ecosystem problem, which we just discussed. How do we make sure that teams and builders who want to build products can go to market fast? How do we make sure as an ecosystem, as a provider and a builder on that ecosystem, on that infrastructure, that our team, the teams that build on top of it have everything they need? Because every builder is ultimately a customer. They need to, we provide them with the tools and they need to be successful. And that's where EVM is currently offers the best tool suite in terms of not only build experience, but also user experience in terms of better wallets, social sign-in, better multisig setups, more robust infrastructure overall, and things like account abstraction, which, you know, allow you to even pay fees in any asset, even no matter what, you know, at the end of the day, the miners are paid with, you can allow people to just, you know, use whatever they have in their wallet, be it a stable coin, and then it's converted in the background. So you really can improve user experience by a lot. And then the third problem is a problem of liquidity. And it's really like, how do you get other assets into the ecosystem? How do you allow people to use stablecoins? Because ultimately we have seen the market decide that they want stablecoins, right? You've seen that people don't transact on Lightning today, not as much as I think everybody hoped, but users in Argentina use it on Tron. Tron has the most daily active users I've seen, just a statistic today. Of all the other EVM-based chains, because they've managed to provide a product that people really want. And I think it will be unwise to ignore what you end users really want. And that's why the goal of the Bob Stack is to make these tools available and to be able to provide both builder tools, but also access to infrastructure that allows us to bring stablecoins onto Alice and other assets that people might want to transact with, be it RWAs and so on.
I mean, it's a hard problem bootstrapping things. Like, I think Rootstock has definitively demonstrated that. I know they didn't exactly port EVM one-to-one, but even being similar enough to just easily transition and get working on that, like, they really haven't gotten any adoption. Like, as much as people who show that platform would get triggered, it's just like Liquid. Like, you can go look on a block explorer and see like the trickle of a handful of transactions in every block.
Well, gentlemen, I know we're coming up here on the top of the hour. I know that you guys are paving the way here for Bitcoin sidechains, you know, especially in a decentralized manner, in a federated manner. And I know we're all really excited to see where things go. Alexei and Julian, before we conclude things here, if you know, there are any aspiring developers down in the listening section below, or anybody listening to this post show on the podcast, where can people, you know, in an open source manner, contribute to Enduro, contribute to Alice, where can you point them to and how do they get involved?
Absolutely, Alan. I'd say start with going to mduro.io or the website for Alice, alice.tech, T-E-C-H. We have contact forms there. You can reach out to our teams and we'll be in touch about, you know, talking through ideas that you may have, talking through questions. I will say that at the moment, both of chains are in private alpha form where we're basically testing them with very close partners. It's not something that is totally open source just yet. This announcement is basically telling the world, hey, this exists. Come to us with your great ideas. And the goal is sometime in April to come out with a public open beta testnet that, you know, people can go and engage with. We don't expect a mainnet release until late in the summer. So just so everybody is very clear on that in terms of when you can start actually transacting real money on Alice, it's going to be a little while. But the goal is to have that open beta period to have it as engaging and as active as other open betas that have come out in other networks. My mind quickly goes to Base and On-Chain Summer. I really want to recreate something that is as engaging and exciting to people both within and outside of Bitcoin as soon as the halving. So aggressive goal. We'll see if we can stick to it. But that's really when we'll be going out to the community and everybody will be able to access the repo and you know, give their comments. At the end of the day, both Coordinate and Alice are permissionless chains, and we are going to have open GitHub repos with maintainers that will accept pull requests. So on that front, people are more than willing to engage. But if you have some concrete ideas just based on what you've heard in this particular spaces that you'd like to engage with us on, again, enduro.io, in case you're just interested in Enduro broadly speaking and the chains that come out, and alice.tech for Alice in particular. And that'll, you know, whatever contact form you see on there will come to both of our teams and we'll be in touch about next steps. So that's how you can contribute in the immediate term.
Awesome, gentlemen. Well, Julian, Alexi, Shinobi, appreciate everyone's time today. That concludes another episode of Bitcoin Magazine Spaces. And we'll see y'all next time. Cheers, and everybody have a good day.
Thanks a lot, Alan. And thanks, everyone.
Adios.